Well, good afternoon and welcome. It is wonderful to see everybody here. I appreciate your presence. It feels like it's been a while since I've preached, and it has been. It has been a blessing for me to be spiritually fed. I appreciate the message this morning. I appreciate Kenny Chumbly's message last weekend. That has been very, very beneficial to me. A lot has happened since I last preached, though, and I want to talk a little bit about it. 2 weeks ago, after the sermon, we had the horrible violence in Las Vegas. 3 weeks before, 3 weeks ago, we had the shooter that went into the Church of Christ in Tennessee. And unfortunately, those are just the latest instances of a very violent world. We're constantly reminded there's just so much violence. And I've been thinking for the last 2 weeks, especially about Las Vegas, but not limited to that, not limited to the recent things. But I haven't been thinking so much about the wickedness as much as I have been about the humanity. About, you know, sometimes people say, well, we're only human, but have you not seen the best of humanity at times? We have seen people who've done amazing things under really difficult circumstances. And I know I'm not the only one who thinks, what would I do if I'm in this circumstance? And don't you wish, don't you desire to be like what some of those people have been, who have stayed behind and risked their lives to help others that were in need, whether it be their friends or complete strangers? The people who have, and we've had no other way of describing them other than they were heroes. And I want you to see yourself in them. Because we imagine, what would we do if we were in that circumstance? We are in that circumstance. We are always in that circumstance. Because our situation is, we face a very spiritual, violent adversary. His temptations are spiritual bullets that are tearing through the world. The persecution that we face are spiritual bombs. The false teaching are spiritual nuclear weapons. We are facing constant spiritual violence. And we need spiritual heroes. And so when you look at what those individuals did and you see these incredible pictures and hear the incredible stories, we really should be seeing ourselves, saying, this is what I need to reach for on a spiritual level. What I need to strive to do and to be in the face of this spiritual violence that we face. And there are many things that we could see in the heroes of our time, as well as within scriptures, to give us a call as to what we ought to do. And so I want us to consider some of how we can be a spiritual hero. And I want to impact you this afternoon for you to just view the world the way it really is. It's so easy for us not to see the violence that's really going on constantly around us. To see the violence and to think, how should I react? And the first point that I want to have on here, that being spiritual heroes, technically, I suppose, it doesn't fit on the hero side. And that is simply flee. You know, we don't call the people that run heroes. And in fact, sometimes we criticize them. There's the guy who was the head singer of the band, and he starts realizing what's going on, and he runs off the stage, and there's video of him running off the stage, and people criticized him for it. Maybe it's not heroic, but you know what? It's the entire point. Survive. And sometimes that involves fleeing. Getting out of there. And the scriptures tells us that we face this great violence, we need to flee. So in 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 18, it's flee sexual immorality. And isn't that something we need to do in this society? It is all around us, this temptation. And we need to flee from it. In 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 14, it's flee from idolatry. And as soon as you consider the love of money to be covetousness and idolatry, you realize we are always in the need to be running from this. In fact, 1 Timothy 6 and verse 11, he says, now flee from these things. And if you look at what's these things, previous verses, 9 through 10, love of money is the root of all sorts of evil. He's talking about fleeing from materialism, fleeing from money and the love of money and all that it brings upon us. And then in 2 Timothy 2 and verse 22, he tells us to flee from youthful lusts. But you get the idea. There's a time, there's a place where we just have to survive. We are under attack. We are the ones facing a threat, and we need to get out of there. Maybe that's not heroic, but quite frankly, if I make it to heaven, I don't care whether I was a hero or not. I made it. So that's what you do. Sometimes we need to flee. But you don't do it and trample other people. We need to think about others. We're not the only ones that are facing threats. And so we need to be like that picture of that man who's laying on top of a woman. I don't even think he knew who she was, shielding her. Or the other people that we hear about who put hands on blood, on things that are they're disgusting to think about and look at, and they get over all of that because there's a desperate need in their presence, and so they put their hand on that person and they do everything they can to make that person live. They help the wounded. And is that not what we've been called to do? Many people have fell to temptation. Many people have given in to persecution and to false teaching. And it is easy for us to look at them as they have doubt and as they have sin creeping into their lives, to give up on them because they're going a different direction than you. And they are. They're going the wrong direction. You're going towards life and they're going towards death, but they're going towards death. Save them. See them like the people in that circumstance when they see somebody who is shot. It's not just, well, I need to go this way and you're not coming. It's they see the need. When somebody's giving into sin, there's a need. When somebody stops attending services, it's not just that they've turned their back on us. There's a need. There's a danger that they're facing. When they start to have doubts creeping into their minds and their faith becomes weak, there's a need. There's a wound in their soul. Who will answer the call? In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 14, really, you could read so much of this section right here, this context, but just verse 14, we urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with everyone. And a spiritual wound occurs. It's not like you give them one little quick speech, say, don't do that, and their life just gets fixed and everything gets better. We have to be patient. It takes time for the recovery. It takes time for them to improve. But we need to encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak. There are all around us wounded people. We need to be the heroes. We need to be the people that help them. And isn't it a shame that the people of the world would line up and overwhelm the blood banks, but we can't be bothered to help with the spiritual wounds of the people around us? Help the wounded. One of the ways to be a spiritual hero is to follow the heroes that stop the attack. The heroes that aren't just about, okay, here's somebody who's wounded. We're going to keep it from anybody else being wounded. We're going to go after the person who's shooting. We're going to go after the fire that's endangering everybody. Those are the heroes we really think about so frequently. They're the ones who charge towards the danger. And aren't we called to do that on occasion? So look at these passages in reverse, but in Jude 1 and verse 3, what does it tell us to do? Contend earnestly for the faith. That's fight against the false teaching. That is stop the lies and the error that is being spread around. To fight earnestly for the truth. That responsibility falls squarely upon the elders. It is not limited to the eldership, but in Titus, when he talks about the qualifications for the elders, he goes on in verse 9 as the end of these qualifications that they need to hold fast the faithful word which is in accordance with the teaching so that he will be able to both to exhort in sound doctrine and refute those who contradict. For there are many rebellious men, empty talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision, who must be silenced. Here's this threat. Here's somebody who's entering into the church who is bringing about false teaching, and there needs to be men, there needs to be Christians who stand up and stop it. Make it to where other people realize that is error, that is false, to see the danger for what it is. And there's an example of that in Acts chapter 18, and this is not an apostle, it's not an apostle, and it's not one of the elders. It's just a man who becomes a Christian and is zealous for God. In Acts chapter 18, and what I really like about Apollos is, as near as I can tell right now, he is exactly like you and me. He is zealous for God. He doesn't have spiritual gifts. He doesn't have this inspiration, this ability to get prophecy from God. What he has is the book you hold, the Old Testament, all really he has. And he uses that powerfully. And here's what it says in verse 27. And when he wanted to go across to Achaia, the brethren encouraged him and wrote to the disciples to welcome him. And when he had arrived, he greatly helped those who had believed through grace. So he comes and he's a hero, right? He's helping them. How'd he do it? Next verse. For he powerfully refuted the Jews in public, demonstrating by the scriptures that Jesus was the Christ. Here are these Jews who are opposing, who are blaspheming against God. And he comes in and he goes after them and their teaching and powerfully shows they're not right. And in what is he doing there? He helped the believers. He's a hero. He's like the police that go after the shooter. He's like the fireman who goes after the fire. And he's an example for us then. We need people that go after the attacker, that try to stop the attack. But not every hero is visible. Not everybody is seen. There are so many that don't get the pictures and the praise. And there's those who do the preparation, that is, that get things lined up. When there's a fire, it's the people that beforehand had the fire drills and told everybody where to go and what to do. It's the policemen that had all the training beforehand that told them, okay, so if there's ever an active shooter circumstance, this is what we do. And as the police have learned and the SWAT teams have learned, we've cut down on the casualties. We've started saving lives just through the preparation. We know we're going to be attacked. We know we're going to face the threat from Satan. If we prepare beforehand, we can save souls, our own and those around us. Jesus knew that. That's why we exist as a group. That's why we're a church. Because what he tells us in Ephesians chapter 4 is that he has given us these roles within the church for this purpose. He gave some as apostles and some as prophets and some as evangelists and some as pastors and teachers for the equipping of the saints for the work of service to the building up of the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a mature man, to the measure of the stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ. As a result, we are no longer to be children tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine. This is your spiritual war. This is your spiritual battle. And he's saying, we have been given these roles within the church. We've been given the church itself so that we are prepared. And we will not fall for every trickery of men, the craftiness of scheming, by the doctrines of demons. And so we need to prepare, and that's part of what our Bible class is about, and that's part of what the sermons are about, and that's part of what our discussions with one another should be about, and our studies with one another, to help each other to know the truth so we can see false teaching as soon as it shows up. To help each other to have the strength that we will overcome temptation as soon as it shows up. To have a resolve to not fall for the violence that Satan has planned for you and for the people around you. And then there are those who help the helpers. And frankly, they're no less heroic. They may not be risking their lives, but they're helping to solve the problem. Especially we have seen this with the firefighters in the years past in Colorado, when we've had just such severe fires. There were people who felt helpless. They weren't able to go on the front line, but what they could do is offer pillows and water and things that the firefighters desperately needed so that they had the strength to go on and fight and do more. And maybe we aren't always able to have that relationship with somebody that we're going to be the one who can save them, but we can help the person who does. We can encourage them. Our elders of this congregation have truly a thankless job, and it should not be so. It should be a job where they are thanked often, encouraged often, where we help them through the week to do the things that they've got to do. They are helping save souls, and we need to encourage them in that process so that they don't become discouraged and weak. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, perhaps talking about elders, perhaps even going beyond that, but he says, "But we request of you, brethren, that you appreciate those who diligently labor among you and have charge over you in the Lord and give you instruction, and that you esteem them very highly in love because of their work." So here they are working, help them do it. In 2 Corinthians chapter 1, certainly Paul was a worker, correct? And Paul would go and he would preach in places that most people hadn't gone and most people couldn't go. And he faced things that most people wouldn't face. And he talks about how low he's getting in verse 8. He says, "For we do not want you to be unaware, brethren, of our affliction which came to us in Asia, and that we were burdened excessively beyond our strength, so that we despaired even of life." That's pretty low. And he continues on in verse 9, "Indeed, we had the sentence of death within ourselves, so that we would not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead, who delivered us from so great a peril of death, and will deliver us, he on whom we have set our hope, and he will yet deliver us." And now notice what the next thing he says, "You also joining in helping us through your prayers, so that thanks may be given by many persons on our behalf for the favor bestowed on us through the prayers of many." And so here it is, he's in this desperate situation. He feels like death is right upon him. He even welcomes death. He's so miserable in this circumstance. And he says, "God will save me, and so will you, by praying for me." Sometimes that's all we need to do. Sometimes that's a great thing. I mean, not sometimes. It is always a great thing to do, to remember each other in prayer. And to appeal to God for help, not just for ourselves and our worries and our concerns, but for the people around us. That's what we can do to help. Notice what it says in Romans chapter 16. There's this woman at this church who's just, she's an amazing woman. She's been so beneficial and so helpful. She says, "I commend you to our sister Phoebe, who is a servant of the church which is at Cenchrea, that you receive her in the Lord in a manner worthy of the saints, and that you help her in whatever matter she may have need of you. For she herself has also been a helper of many and of myself as well." First of all, don't get the wrong idea and think that only men can be the heroes. That is very far from the truth. And second of all, think about what you can do. And here it says, it's a really big list. Anything you can do to help her. So here's this great woman who's been doing great things. He says, whatever she needs, you guys do it. So she can continue to help. So she can continue to serve. We need those who help the helpers. And then we need those who have mercy and forgiveness. And I think of all of these, this may be the most challenging one. And it goes very well with this morning's lesson on loving your enemies. Getting to a point where you pray for their forgiveness and their salvation. Policemen amaze me. They simply amaze me. If there is somebody who is threatening others, the policemen draw their guns and are prepared to kill. They have in their mind, "I'm going to kill this guy. If I get a shot, I take it." But as soon as that man, that, let's call him a villain, takes the gun away from others and points it at himself, what do? Instantly, they shift gears and try to get him to lower the gun. We try to save the bad guy. It's amazing. There was an attack in Europe. I don't remember all the details. The details aren't what mattered. They're not what sticks in our head. But there was somebody who, through his messed up sense of justice, vigilantism, decided that he needed to go and attack a mosque. And so he went and attacked a mosque, and it doesn't really matter what method he used, whether it was a gun or a cars or whatever. He's attacking a mosque, and he is hurting people. But they get to him. They stop him. They throw him on the ground and they start beating him and they are going to kill him. Except for the mosque version of a preacher, the imam, comes out and says, no, don't, and saved the life of the one who was killing them. Now, I don't agree with that religion, but that was somebody following the example of Jesus in that case. Is that not what Jesus does physically first? When Jesus is getting ready to be arrested, here comes these people that are coming to arrest Jesus incorrectly in Luke chapter 22. And Peter takes a sword and he attacks. Does not Jesus say, stop that? And even more than that, he heals the man who was wounded. And we might think that Jesus only did that because he was trying to save the lives of his followers, to make certain that they didn't face punishment, that they didn't face a death sentence. But then what does Jesus do when he's on the cross? And we talked about this morning in Luke chapter 23 and verse 34. What does Jesus do? He then says, Father, forgive them. That's what we're called to do. We're called to look at the people that are dangerous to us with compassion. The people that are a threat with a desire to save. Paul needed that when he was back when he was called Saul. He was the persecutor of the church. In Acts chapter 9 and verse 10, it's Ananias. Ananias is called, go talk to him. Needed somebody to look at him no longer as the violent aggressor, no longer as the worst enemy the church had ever faced, but now as a soul that needs to be saved. And then he comes to Jerusalem, Saul does, and all the disciples flee from him except for Barnabas. He needed Barnabas, somebody who would look at Saul and say, God can change him, God can save him. And so Barnabas goes to him and helps him out. Look at what's stated in Jude. In the book of Jude, where we're told to contend earnestly for the faith, right? Because there are these men who are creeping in unnoticed. They are bringing in false teaching. They are devouring souls, destroying churches. And he does not use soft language about them. They are incredibly dangerous. They are truly a problem. But verse 22, he says, have mercy on some who are doubting, save others, snatching them out of the fire, and on some have mercy with fear, hating even the garment polluted by the flesh. Do you see that balance there on that last one? On one hand, you recognize their danger. You despise what they stand for and what they're doing. But on the other hand, you have mercy. Have mercy on them, but despise everything about what they're doing. Perhaps there is no greater heroic act than showing mercy and forgiveness towards those who are our threats. So when you see these actions, and I am sad to say that if God grants us time to continue on in life, we'll probably see it again. And we'll see heroes again. And I want you to think about them and ask, is that me now? In the spiritual fight. There are a few more things I'd like to say. I saw Ryan, you're getting ready to do the songs, and you picked an amazing song for this lesson. He had no idea this lesson was coming. I don't know how he did it, but he picked an amazing song. Some concluding thoughts I just want to point out. And the first one is, we need to understand that spiritual violence is worse than physical. I mean, I know we are appalled at what happened in Las Vegas, and we should be. I'm not lessening that. I'm saying our situation is worse for multiple reasons. One, frequency. We're tired of the amount of violence, right? We're tired of the hearing shootings. We hear about them, seems like, every week, right? That's it? Every week? In this entire country, once a week? How often do you suppose spiritual attacks from Satan happen? The odds of you being in a violent circumstance like what we've seen and what have been described are ridiculously low. The odds of you facing Satan are, you will. There's just no odds to it. You just will, you have, you will again. That's it. We're constantly in this battle. It is worse because it's more dangerous. It's more dangerous in the sense that we're talking about physical lives versus eternal souls that are at risk. And then you take, just take Las Vegas for a second. One guy, one deranged guy, I think no greater truth has been spoken than what our president said. It was pure evil. That's all there is to it. He was evil. One evil guy aimed at an audience of several thousand people and started firing, and he killed 60. Look, when we're dealing with Satan and he starts firing after a thousand people, we're lucky to save 60. In cities, we're lucky to have a church of 60 people. We face a greater threat, a greater danger. And there's the debate goes on right now. How can we stop this violence? And it's a worthwhile debate. And we can talk about laws and freedoms and all of those things. I'm not going to get into the politics of this. But here's something I know is partially true in this world and absolutely true in the spiritual realm. We won't stop it. You won't stop it all. Because with Satan, absolutely with Satan, you cannot disarm him and you cannot convince him to stop. He will not. All we can do is fight back and be prepared. And the final thing I want to say is to recognize the danger. Please see this world and the spiritual war it is in. We saw this with Las Vegas, this moment. And I don't know if it's good or bad that we have so much video, but you can see and understand what the people are going through as they listen to the band, and then you hear that first round, and everybody thought, fireworks. And who ran? As long as they thought, fireworks, nobody runs. As long as we do not recognize that Satan is firing at us, targeting us, throwing everything at us, we do not run. When we do not see the temptation and the danger it is, when we do not see the persecution and the false teaching and that everything is all working together where Satan is aiming squarely at your heart and your soul to destroy you, when we don't see that, we don't put up our guards and we don't put up our shield, and we are simply standing targets that will get nailed. Recognize the danger. Let us fight back. And let us fight back heroically. Flee and save everyone along the way you can. Or, as God told Joshua when he was being told to do these great things, be strong and courageous. Good pick. If there are any here who are not Christians, you have given in to Satan. He owns you. And we encourage you to turn your back on him and your face towards God. If you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, and are willing to repent of your sins and confess that faith, the water is ready. Do not delay. Be baptized into Christ for the forgiveness of your sins and join this army and this family. And if you're a Christian and you have fallen away, we want to help. Our goal isn't to judge. Our goal is to save. Let us help you. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing?
Be strong.